Hi, I'm Lindsay. I'm a registered veterinary nurse and I qualified in 2009. I'm now a teaching fellow at the Clinical Skills Centre at the Royal Veterinary College.
And I'm Sarah. I'm also a registered veterinary nurse and I graduated in 2011. I'm now an assistant lecturer in veterinary nursing here at the Royal Veterinary College. Welcome to our podcast.
We're here today with Brian, our podcast engineer, to investigate the evidence base behind the nursing practices that we use every day.
We want to make this evidence base more accessible to you in practice.
This is VN's Investigate.
Okay, so today we are talking to Rachel Davis on professional identity. Rachel studied anatomy and human biology at Liverpool by accident and then undertook a PhD in evolution in the evolution of human walking, again by accident. Her first job was a lecturer in sports science department at Brunel University, where she quickly realised she wasn't as sporty as she first thought. In 2003, Rachel joined the RVC as a lecturer in veterinary anatomy and moved around different jobs for 14 years, including working within the widening participation team and academic development team.
From these roles, Rachel became interested in coaching and decided to go for it, leaving her job to finish coaching training. She then spent 4.5 years as a developmental coach, working for herself with groups and individuals before returning to the RVC as a senior lecturer in veterinary education. She lives with her husband, 15 years married today, so congratulations, Rachel, and two kids, and a dog, two cats, and a bearded dragon. What's your bearded dragon called, Rachel?
Flash.
Flash?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a great name.
It's a long story.
That's great. So thank you for being with us today, and we're going to talk about professional identity. I think this is really important because, you know, there's lots of nurses out in practice who want to make change and want to get into research and want to do all these different things, even if it's just specialising or, you know, getting into education, for example. Or we've got lots of people in the profession with so many skills, and how do we make the most of them by sort of making the most of ourselves? But we're going to start off with our normal first question, which is, when you were younger, what did you want to be? And did you ever envisage that you would be where you are now?
It's a great question. I love your question. I think I always wanted to be a doctor. I kind of remember trying to apply compresses and things to my sisters, one who really liked it and one who hated it, when they were had flu and things like that. I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to help people. And I was pretty academic, but not brilliantly academic, if you know what I mean. So I set off to do 3 A-levels, maths, biology and chemistry. And within a couple of weeks, realised that I really wasn't interested in chemistry at all, the tiny little drips of things that you had to put in tubes. So I changed to French and loved it. Maths, we won't even talk about. long story short, I got into, as I said, by accident into anatomy and human biology. And all through that degree, people on my course were trying to move into medicine at Liverpool. And I just was so easily dissuaded. So even though I was acing it, I just didn't jump in. So now, would I envisage it? I don't know what I envisaged. I had no idea, but probably I probably knew I'd be in education, yeah, because it was massively part of my upbringing. So yeah, and I was just, while I was thinking about your question, I thought what I do now is spend a lot of time with people, helping them help themselves live happy, healthy lives. So it's kind of what I hoped being a doctor would be, maybe, without all of the prostates and
Yeah,
blood transfusions and things, maybe.
But I think that's really refreshing to hear, and I think that'd be really refreshing for some of our listeners as well, because a lot of vets and vet nurses go into the profession and, you know, think this is all I've ever wanted to be and this is all I've ever wanted to do. And actually, you don't often hear people saying, well, I don't actually know what I want to do, or I've never really known, or, you know, I've sort of taken this random path to be where I am today. And I think the more people see, the more obvious it is that there are lots of different pathways in and out of this profession, and, you know, they're accessible to us.
It's really interesting to me, obviously, because my job as a coach, maybe that's helped me settle myself down, but I've spent my entire professional life really searching for this nirvana, this thing, this, I just thought, where's my square hole? You know, I was always that square peg in a round hole, and I kept thinking everybody else has got it, everybody else is sorted, they know what they want to do, they're acing this professional thing. And I would be in a job and I'd be all excited and like, yes, this is for me. And then maybe it's not, maybe I'm not really good at this. And I've made I always knew I was good with people, but I never really felt the things that I loved and was good at were recognized or appreciated. And I finally found my way to a job where that's what I need. I need to be myself to be good at my job. And that's just gorgeous, because it's taken a really long time to get there.
I think that's it as well, because you often, with age and experience, you learn not to compare yourself with other people so much, and actually just to think, is this what I'm good at and what I want to do and which things am I gravitating towards and is this for me? And it does take time to know that and sort of go on that voyage of discovery to find out what you really want to do. And I suppose this comes into where we're talking about identity and what is identity and how do we know that it's ours and that we're actually thinking about that.
I'm all for this kind of seeing yourself as being under development and trying to like visit with yourself. I think that when we're younger, we're on this kind of speedy attainment journey. I've got to get to this and then I'm going to get to that, and this is school and exams and the profession I want and the hoops I need to jump through and the hurdles and the peaks and the troughs of that journey. But there's always this sort of destination in mind, and it's this kind of constant pushing towards it and taking yourself towards it, and then what, like, what is it? How do you want your life to be? What do you want every day to be like? How do you like to live? And how do you want to earn your money? And so for me, it brings us into ego, sort of understanding ourself and our sense of self, and maybe just accepting that that's going to keep changing. There isn't a steady state here. We are going to what drives us, what motivates us, what we value, what we prioritize in life will constantly change, and that's a really good thing. And I keep coming back to that idea of the 7-year itch, because for me, I've got a 7-year itch. It might even be shorter. I think it's like 4 or 5 years. I don't want to scare my current bosses, but I just need to relearn new stuff. And instead of feeling embarrassed about that now or like hiding it away, I just need a new course, a new... maybe I need a new identity, I don't know, but I start to value different things and I sort of need to open up a new sphere of what I'm capable of, and I'm glad of it now rather than embarrassed or ashamed of that sort of, I sort of used to call it, I had a attention span of a flea, but you know, 4 or 5 years is a decent time to sort of do stuff and then want to keep growing maybe.
Yeah, definitely. And then you're always bringing in like new ideas to that new team, if you do join a new team each time, or, you know, new ideas to that new project. So I don't think, it's not something to shy away from, really, is it? But it's something that probably socially has been sort of not well accepted.
Yeah.
There's always, I teach a lot of this sort of thing to our students, and there's always that pressure of, well, you've moved around a lot. Does that not look bad on your CV? And I was like, well, no, look how many places I've worked, look how much experience I've got from all these different places. And like, diversity is not something to shy away from. So, and that's what it is. Like, it's not showing anything about myself. It's just showing that, you know, you can learn different things in different places and keep bringing new ideas. So
Rachel, I was just going to just sort of clarify. So, identity, it's something that's always evolving, something that isn't fixed. So I suppose you could think of it like intelligence as well. Like you're not that's not fixed. So if you have a growth mindset, you can always change your intelligence, change what you're learning, and also change your identity with that as well.
Yeah. I think that sometimes we pigeonhole ourselves. We might say that other people are doing it, but I actually think deep down we're quite comfortable. It's kind of like a mental shortcut, which is we categorize everything around us so that it's simpler to live life in a complex world. And so it's sometimes easy to just think, this is me in this profession, or everyone sees me like this, and so that's how I've got to be. And yet when we really stop and breathe and think, a lot of that categorization or those mental shortcuts aren't helpful, because they put us in kind of pigeonholes or boxes. And it's usually of our own making, even if we don't want to admit it. So much of what makes us stuck or feel frustrated are things that we do have agency in. So you're right, for identity, my identity has evolved hugely over the years. And I had a really strong identity around education. My parents were academics. It was all about learning and development and higher education and helping people, a lot of social justice. And then I started, I became a mum and I needed to bring that into my identity. I became a coach, that came into my identity. I'm now a child of older parents, and my sort of the way of being in the world is evolving and adapting. And what I found personally through experience is, if I don't listen to that, if I don't give time to making space for my values, making space for my priorities, and thinking about, you know, how do I want this to be? How do I want to be in the world? And if I'm not happy with where I am in the world, then I can make change on that. So I've lived a life surrounded by scientists, clinicians, administrators, you know, all sorts, but probably quite a narrow band. And I would say that most people feel a little bit trapped by one big part of their identity. And it's not necessarily always healthy, I think, because what happens if something goes, you know, what happens if you can't practice anymore? What happens if you can't lift a dog up onto a table, or your hearing goes, or if that's all there is for you, if that's, it's very difficult.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think a lot of things like that come into our lives and then we have to almost change the way that we do things, but it doesn't mean that we're less of, you know, that identity of, you know, say for example you have children and you become a mother and you have to fit your work around being a mother. You know, it doesn't mean that you're less, your identity is less as a veterinary nurse or as a vet, or it just means that you're adapting and you're changing and you're being flexible, I suppose. So it's really important that you don't, I mean, I found this for a while that becoming a mother, I tried to almost like ignore the fact that I was a mother when I was at work. And then when I was at home being a mother, then I would ignore the fact that I worked because I was trying to be two people. But actually, I am both those people in one. So I think it's important to recognize that. And again, like if, like you say, you can't lift a dog up on the table, it's finding other ways and just recognizing those parts of you that you can be proud of and adapt with.
I wonder if some of this is about, because I think identity as a phrase is almost like a stop phrase. And what we want to do is say, but what's underneath that? So it's well worth spending time just thinking about where did all of this come from? Where did my value system come from? Where did my priorities in life come from? And am I okay with that now? Does it fit well for me? And then what do I need to make room for? And time spent really working on that, maybe reflecting on it, keeping a journal, having a conversation with yourself, perhaps with others, where you really start to sort of dig into, because I think a lot of people that I work with who are struggling, there'll be some mismatch somewhere between some really strongly held values or priorities, that somehow there's a mismatch between those and their professional life and or their personal life. And just sort of addressing it, first off, just acknowledging that there is that friction there, can be really helpful, because then we know, oh, that's why I feel so today. And then we know we need to do something, and we can. We really, as you were just saying, that growth mindset, that that thought about I'm not this fixed person. I'm growing and changing, and how I sort of lived my life then might not serve me well now. And I suppose what I've found is that I'm getting closer and closer to being myself in all of my worlds. So the Rachel you're talking to now is really so close to the Rachel who talked to her friends last night, who worked with her kids this morning, and her husband, and the Rachel who would be an educator at the in the Life Centre, but also if you came to see me for coaching, this is the person you would talk to, because my values, my core values and my priorities stay the same whichever role I'm in. So I feel centered, I suppose. So at the centre of it is my Rachel identity, who likes a bit of who likes to learn, who likes intelligence in a not in a fixed way, but likes to grow and develop and be around people, who likes to spend money on cool trainers, even though she's 45, who like really likes a good coffee, who, you know, all of those things feature in every one of my roles. And the more I'm able to do that, the more settled down I feel psychologically. I'm less in battle with myself and others. And I don't blame others for it, because in the old days it was like, oh, these people are just stopping me from, you know, doing what I need to do, or, oh, they just don't get me, or they don't respect me, or they don't pay me enough, or why don't they value the things I like doing? And now I just feel I've turned the tables, and I'm like, I'm in control of this. Like, seriously, I'm the only one who can make this happen and align these things. And it's scary, because now I'm totally responsible for my personal and professional life. But it's also absolutely brilliant, because I can't blame anybody else, and I need to just get on with it.
So true. There's a an exercise that we do with the students, and I think this kind of goes along with what you're saying, Rachel, that we get them to put down all of their values, like blue sky thinking, or they do have a structure that's provided to them as well, and they can take all the boxes that really align to them, and then they have to cut it down, and then they have to cut it down, and eventually you get to your sort of your real core values and what you really, really actually want from life, rather than, you know, all the niceties or the things that you think you should want. And and you come right down to, okay, what do I actually want from my life? And that's the same as, you know, what do you want from your job? All these things sort of merge together. And I do it every year with the students. And yes, my broader values generally stay the same, but each year my real core values do shift depending on what it is at that moment in time. And, you know, it's such an interesting thing, and it's such a worthwhile thing to spend time doing. And I think particularly in the profession as well, where there is a lot of historic hierarchies, both between like vets and nurses, and then, you know, women and men and all those sorts of things, and all these factors are going to come into it. And, you know, they may have played a part in your prior identity and who you think you are, but actually, you know, we need to step back and look at that and say, okay, well, what do I actually want to do? What do I want to achieve? I think perhaps previously, I don't know, maybe we were thinking we were trying to do the same job as the vet, and the vet nurse are doing the same thing, and we've got the same goals, so that means we should work in the same way. But actually, we're coming at it from very different ways, and that's okay, and that's part of our identity. And just, yeah, I think it's just worthwhile spending some time to think about that. And again, the diversity in thought is brilliant in the veterinary practice. All need to think the same thing and act the same way and have the same values. We can, you know, one nurse might have a real Florence Nightingale approach, and everything needs to be clean and tidy, and that's their identity, is all about like the environment. And then another nurse come in and look at the sort of social bonds that animals play, and that's part of their values, is how we socialize. And that's only going to strengthen the team, isn't it, looking at all those different identities, all those different thoughts and feelings and views and approaches. It just makes the whole team stronger.
I
was just going to say, and actually, because the profession, the veterinary nursing profession, is still very new, and so actually as a profession as a whole, we're still, you know, we have got the core values, but it's all the people in it are, you know, it's not very old, so we're sort of still trying to come together really and decide what it is that you know, we want from our profession and the values that we have together and also individually.
And do we take those values from human nursing, which we often look to? Maybe we're trying to use their identity to form our own identity, but equally then we have got the vets who we work closely with and we always will, and that again brings strength to the team. So how do we create our own identity rather than trying to replicate others, I guess?
And that's the interesting part, isn't it? Because you've got a kind of, you've got all levels. So you've got your own internal context and then the external context that you're operating in, which will encompass your home life, your work life, but then your organisational culture and your professional culture. So as you say, the sort of RCVS values and priorities, and you see these things written up, the visions and just sort of having a shared vision of how things will be is so important. But understanding that a shared vision doesn't mean that everybody has the same values or operates in the same way. And I love it that you're talking about that kind of, it's an inclusive way of being, isn't it? And it's an openness to seeing the world from multiple perspectives and not thinking that there's one right way of doing things. And I'm sure that's what comes in. I felt in working in this discipline area that schooling very much focuses on their, it's kind of black and white thinking, you know, there's a right and wrong way of doing things. There's a fact that needs to be learned and regurgitated. There's so much to be done, let's just get this done. And then off you go into practice and suddenly there are all sorts of people and all sorts of ways of thinking about the way the world works, and which is just the complete opposite of how you've been trained. So thinking about that is important as well, and thinking about how we see knowledge, how we see the world has just been shaped so strongly.
And I think we spoke a bit about this in our podcast with Dan about, you know, what is intelligence and what is knowledge and all that sort of thing. And just like, as this podcast is all about research too, you know, appreciating that people have different approaches to their research and, you know, they might be coming from a very different perspective, and that will change how they undertake the research. It will change what methods they use because it depends on what they value. Numbers versus conversations, for example, or, you know, it will change how they analyze the data, because yes, you come up with a result, but how you decide to use that result in discussion will really vary depending on who that person is and what their values are. So just having an awareness that this is a thing to be reflective about and to think about and to spend some time on in all aspects of our life, really, I think it's so important.
And that your values are important as well.
It's interesting for me, and I hope it's interesting for the people listening. You know, I'm someone with a PhD and a long history of working in academia who has shied away from research because I never felt good at it. I just never felt I could meet other people's or my own expectations. And I always felt like the judgment was, this isn't good enough. I never felt like I quite fitted in, or I don't know if I sort of, I did maths A level, so would you believe it, I just still struggle with some of the sort of mathy elements, and being in the sort of field of biomechanics and sciences, you can easily feel like you're not quite fitting in or good enough. But what I'm finding is you know, I sort of went off a bit, and then I'm coming back in thinking there is a place for me in this. I maybe there is a way of me. But with research, I'm fine. Well, it's such an interesting thing for me to even think about with you guys, because I just found, I think research as a discipline is, it's judgmental, so much more judgmental than it needs to be. And it's not at all inclusive. And there's that same sort of hierarchy of knowledge and expertise and keeping people out, this kind of trap door that you can't get through. And it's only just recently that I'm starting to think I might have something to say, and that I might have a seat at this table, and that I might enjoy it. Like, it's mind-blowing because I've been in this job for 25 years and I'm only just thinking, you know what, there are other ways of doing this. And I suppose, Sarah, you and I have this sort of joint understanding. We only just realised that there are ways of being a researcher and doing research that might fit well with us, and particularly in the social sciences, that we might lends itself to the way we like to work. I don't want to think up research ideas. I'm interested in the real world I'm living in, and isn't it wonderful that people have written papers about it? Ooh, let's have a look. So, and that's not less important than the bench scientist, maybe. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and that, I think that's what Lindsay and I are trying to achieve with this whole project, is that actually anyone can be a researcher. You don't have to be that person in the lab. You don't have to have all these, you know, qualifications after your name. You just need to be interested and want to find things out. And once you've decided that, you just then need to have the confidence to start exploring how you're going to find that out and, you know, take the first steps. And for nurses, in practice, that's the information that our profession needs, is what's going on in the profession and what's going on at the actual front line of what we're doing. And just let's collect information on that. And it could be numbers, it could be experiences, it could be anything really. And something nice to start with is a small audit where you can just work on, you know, a question that's bugging you in practice and driving you mad and you want to find the answer to, and we know that there's not many answers out there. Okay, how can I answer that in a simple way? Because that's how most people are working in practice. We don't want anything too complex because we're busy people. You know, how do I answer this? And can I find any meaning in this? And is there anything I can do about it? And help answer that question and then solve that problem if it is a problem. I think that's what we're trying to achieve. Sorry, Rachel.
Yeah, no, I just think what you're describing, and I find this is really common. And so, say, for example, on the PG cert that I'm involved in, people come in and they feel as if they should be fully formed. And actually, yeah, they need to build, just as they built their, whether it was vet nursing, vet medicine, physiotherapy, bench science, they built that probably from the age of 11, 12, 13 in senior school. So this will take time too. And we shouldn't be afraid of being novices. And just because we're at the beginning of that journey and we need a lot of direction doesn't mean that we can't really quite quickly move on. So as you've described, taking on small evaluation projects where you're interested in itself because it's good for your own practice and maybe for your as an individual, but also as your team, starting to sort of cut your teeth on small little evaluative projects is a great way of increasing your skills and your sort of confidence and competence. But with the right sort of mentoring around you and coaching and support, you can quite quickly start to be the person who is just naturally being a bit more evaluative, being a bit more reflective, starting to really think about why do we do things the way we do them, and how will I know if this is the best way, and what else are people doing that might be useful for me? And that can happen in tiny little steps. We don't need to, I just don't think we should start thinking that we have to be a fully fledged excellent researcher. We can start at the beginning and feel okay with being a novice.
I really like that, Rachel. I think it sits well with the people that will be listening, or the nurses that will be listening to this. And there is, if you go through, if anyone's sort of done anything like this or made like even a small change in practice, you know, like, I don't know, introducing a different form or changing a form that will actually benefit the patients and bring a better outcome or better standard of care, then at the end of it, you just feel more empowered and you think, I did that. And that was a small thing, but I've actually made a difference. And that all feeds into your identity, in that, you know, perhaps this is something that you're good at. This area is what you enjoy learning about and applying to your practice setting. So it's really important, and it has a huge part in identity, I think, as well, and our professional growth.
I agree. I mean, I spent a lot of time learning things and getting frustrated because I wasn't quite sure how they would fit. It felt like learning for learning's sake. But it was only really when doing my when I did my PG cert myself years and years ago, I was so busy I couldn't really like immerse myself in it. And it was only later I started to appreciate that learning. But as a coach, making room to develop myself and then being able to, it really was just like, people are writing papers about what I do or textbooks that I will be able to take things from, use tomorrow in my work life or my home life to positive impact. Like, that's just amazing. Just give me more books, because as soon as I can read anything else, and who can I share this with? Like, who else that I work with would benefit from this new way of doing something, or this deeper understanding of this concept, or this relationship between two things. So I do wonder if we suffer from this kind of this need to have qualifications and levels. We have to assess, and we do need to obviously put in place, it is like a gatekeeping function to make sure that people have the skills and abilities and knowledge to fulfill and meet the needs of their profession safely. However, by doing so, we almost put people off putting themselves forward to grow, because they're so used to being told, that's not good enough, that's not up to scratch, you don't want to do it like this, you have to do it like that. We get into that mindset of, somebody else is going to tell me that the way I'm doing it isn't right, and so I'm not sure I'm going to bother. Whereas what I'd love to see is that we're all super interested, super engaged. We're constantly seeing things that we'd like to look into more, that we want to read about for its sake and for the journey, for the growth that you're going to do as part of it, not because you're going to be graded at some point. So I'm it's hard for me, because I am all about fairness and parity. I've got all these values, so I'm really about fairness and parity and grading, and I do believe in assessments, but I think that we should not only focus on those and remind ourselves that they are one way of driving learning and also accrediting and gatekeeping, but there are many other forms of professional development that are on the job, that are rich, that are worthwhile, that sort of artistry that we developed as we go. That's the stuff that I really value. I've gone off on one, sorry. I should stop.
I actually don't mind that you've got off on one. I think that's really interesting, Rachel. And there are so many other things that, you know, the tangible things that we see are, like you say, the grades or the qualifications that you have, but there are so many other skills that as professionals we have and we learn, and that they're important as well. One of which, I suppose, is the leadership within a profession, I'm not talking about that you are head of something, but just leading something like research or getting involved in something where you can be a leader. I just wondered what you thought about how people could approach that if they want to kind of start on a project or become a leader in an area that they're interested in.
Lindsay, I mean, God knows if I'm the person to give people advice on this, because I tend to just jump it. I'm one of those people who has always jumped in with both feet. I've always got far too much energy and enthusiasm to my detriment. And what I think is, you've got to choose the things that excite you and interest you, that you will maintain that energy on. And the types of goals, the types of areas you want to be in should be aligned with your core values, the things that you would do anyway, the things you'd skip to work for, the things that have real purpose and meaning for you. And then be that person at work. Don't wait for permission to be that person. Start talking about those things. Be the conversations you have, you give people an idea of who you are by those conversations. So change your narrative. Talk to people about your aspirations and talk about your interest in research. Tell them that you're terrified about getting started, but that you know this is something you want to do. We often just think everybody's judging us or are going to somehow not believe in us, but actually when I run, I quite often like running coaching groups, because as soon as you get people together, they're like, oh, are you telling me everybody's feeling as worried as I am or as anxious about starting? So if you went to your boss and said, I love what I do, I love my job, for me, I just want to drive this thing forward. I'm not sure how to do it. I'm new to this, but I want to work with you on making this my area of interest. How can we do it? Like, and have that kind of collaborative. So I would say to people, quite often, because they're so anxious about stuff, they see it as a confrontation. Oh, I've got to tell my boss I need this time out to do this research, and they're going to hate it, and it'll be an argument, or they'll just shut me down, or, you know, and in your head, you've already had a row, and it's already become a sort of confrontation. Whereas in my coaching training, someone said to me, think about confrontation. Con in Spanish is with. So to confront an issue is to look at something with someone. So you're not trying to force your opinion down their throat. You're not trying to have a position. You're basically saying, I'm interested in this. Can we talk about it? Can we just look at this together, sitting side by side, standing side by side? Let's put that in front of us and both look at it with interest, with openness, and change your narrative. And sometimes I think we've got to be really honest with ourselves. We're the ones who are putting the negative spin on it. So I would say, you know, what would happen if you did the research you loved? What would happen? What would it look like if you were already being that person? Well, go and be that person. It's as simple and as difficult as that, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's one of those that you can often be quite pleasantly surprised when you start to have those conversations, and it kind of applies to anything. Like, you know, if you think, oh, actually I feel like I need a pay rise, but I don't know how to approach that conversation, it's having that openness and being honest and saying, look, I feel that I'm doing this, or I want to do this, and is there space and support for me to do that? And often people or the management will appreciate the honesty and the openness that you have, and then feel inclined to give you that what you need. So I like that idea of changing your approach to things.
And it's really important that you listen to your internal dialogue, because as I said, we make up these stories about the way things are going to go, and then we take that with us into the conversation. So we almost bring in a bit of that conflict. And I just feel as if we could step back and say, can I talk to you about this? And I haven't got any I haven't left it to the last minute, so I'm so furious or so frustrated or so fearful or anxious. I'm talking about it while I'm cool and calm, and I'm open to exploration. And if you can't do that, don't have the conversation. It's not the right time. So I always say to people, talk much more often. Voice how you're feeling much more often. Don't wait for it to get really sort of fractious. And be okay with making yourself vulnerable. And I really do think... I really think that we can change the way we operate with each other, and then suddenly everything opens up. So how will it be if we're all suddenly interested in research? Oh, it could be really cool. Like, we don't know how it's going to go, and we don't know where it's going. But if we just had really open minds about it and said, I'm fascinated in this, and someone says, oh, I'm not really, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, we've all got to try it, haven't we? And it's something that comes, again, like you said, with confidence and with growth and having those core values and feeling able to do that. And that's what's happening with our profession as well. We are just growing together, and we all need to push forward a little bit more and just like put ourselves out there and just use our voice but do it in a way where it's collaborative and that we're working together, and we're not, you know, we are in a interprofessional relationship. So we need to kind of work together and be a team and explore those things together.
I really think that this brings it into that idea of imposter syndrome, which we've spoken about already. But I think it's so interesting to me that we all talk about imposter syndrome, but we don't really do much about it. And I actually think it's pretty simple when it comes down to it. You don't fix imposter syndrome. I think you need to think about how you enter into roles. And if you enter into a role feeling as if you're there on false pretenses, feeling you had to sort of massage the truth, feeling that you had to sell yourself, but secretly it's not what you're good at, then you're always going to feel like an imposter. Whereas if you can be your authentic self, in which means you are under development, that you have areas that you excel in and other areas that you're either weak in or not confident in and that you know need to grow, then you can, imposter syndrome necessarily doesn't need to follow you into all of the roles that you take on. And that is about mindset. That's growth mindset. And that's culture. And I would say in the veterinary profession, plural, that culture has been quite a tough one to work on and to open up. But there is a sense that things, as you said, that the nursing profession is growing so quickly, and just realizing, how do we want to be? How do we want our profession to be? How do we want to be in the world? How do we want to interact with others? That's a really open question, isn't it? Suddenly it's like, oh, it's optimistic. Yeah, this is how I'd like to be.
And it's it comes back to what you said earlier about, you know, you can't change other people. You can only change yourself. And it takes a lot of confidence, and it takes a lot of time, I think, for most people. I'm not saying all people, but most people, to really get that and start thinking, hey, actually, I can't change what you think about me. I can't change any pre-existing ideas you have about me. I can't change how you're behaving right now, but I can change how I'm responding to that situation. And I think you see this on quite a lot of the, you know, the Facebook groups, where other people can identify it for you sometimes, and sometimes it's hard yourself. But if something's not working, you don't have to stay and put up with it. You can change, but you won't change everything around you, but you can change where you are, and you can find fit for yourself. And, you know,
I think that what I would like to see is that that's a positive rather than, because the narrative is so much that somebody's at fault, somebody's to blame. There's this sense that I've been let down, or I've let you down, and it all comes around this kind of social anxiety, really. And if we think back to our basic human needs to fit in and to be accepted by our group, it's no wonder it's such a powerful force. But if we could step back a little bit from this kind of who's to blame here, what's the fault here, how are we gonna, I feel like the veterinary professions have a kind of problem solving mentality, but it's a wicked problem. I don't think that we need to necessarily fix all of these things, find who's to blame and fix it. Whereas some kind of acceptance, becoming more aware of our internal context, becoming more aware of what's going on around us and how it impacts us and how we impact others, and really becoming responsible for ourselves whilst also accountable and supportive of others, we create environments where people grow and learn and can make some mistakes, and perhaps, you know, some decisions go in the wrong direction, but they feel comfortable to acknowledge them and move on. I think that we somehow have got ourselves into this vicious cycle of a blame game, and it's so unhealthy because so much of this is under our own control, as you said, that kind of locus of control thing. Do I want to change my environment or my response to it? But actually, either of those things can be happy and healthy. You can change job happily and well. You can leave well. You can decide, my outcome goal for this is that it goes down really well with my bosses and myself, and that I don't have that awful feeling in the pit of my stomach. I'm going to choose to do this differently. So I think for me that I'd love to get that across to people in general, which is We can choose our approach and our mindset, and we can decide that this is going to be, we're going to do this in the best way we can.
And it comes back to that sort of communication, doesn't it, really? As much as whenever we're teaching it, everyone's like, communication again. But if you can have those conversations and you can just be authentic and talk about your values and talk about what it is that you actually want, no one's going to begrudge you for the decisions you make, especially if they understand why you're making them. Not that you need them to approve that, but that does sometimes help you make you feel better if you say, well, you know, this is why I'm doing it, and this is what I want, and I'm moving on because this is where I can get it and I can't get that here, sort of thing. So,
and you can often connect over values, can't you? So I think you form, what I always say to people is you can't learn together unless you're connected in some way. So if you're really cross or really have friction, it's very, very difficult to learn and grow. It just stops. Thinking stops, learning stops. And so those relationships are incredibly important. And it comes across to me, both in my teaching role and in my role as a coach, that relationships are at the sort of the crux of so many of people's issues with careers. And it's sad, but also brilliant, because that we can do something about that. There are things, I think that so much time is spent working on the sort of cognitive development and acquisition of knowledge and skill. And perhaps not enough time has been spent on development of the self and self-regulation and ability to sort of settle yourself down and be okay with yourself. Once you're getting into those sort of, this like self-coaching, what you're doing is helping yourself make better decisions. I think so much of what we struggle with is decision making. But if we've sort of articulated our core values and we're really sort of comfortable with them, at regular basis, but if we really sort of live a life according to them, that's how we make really good decisions. So I suppose I've brought you right back to core values again, because they're at the center of everything. We settle ourselves down when we're living a life according to our core values. So it's a lovely place to sort of bring us back to, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it would be good for all of us to sort of have a think about what those core values are, and I think I would probably have to write them down and have a good think. But they are there. It's just maybe we haven't identified them to ourselves, but they're in there somewhere. And like Sarah said, you know, they do change as you change. So certainly having a look at those is good.
Once you've got them, so what we do in education is we think about self-regulated learning, and what I found when I was working in academic development was the students were really good at doing something, but not necessarily brilliant at reflecting on how well it went and then going around the cycle again, so modifying and adapting their behaviour in order to make positive change. And so I'd say the same about core values. There isn't that much use in identifying your core values unless you do something with them. So identify them and then think about, how do I live according to them? How do I make them actionable? And then also, where are the sticky points with my career, with my colleagues? Because there will be some. There's got to be. We don't work in a vacuum. And then what about home life? Oh, is that why me and my husband clash over this one thing? There's a value rub going on there. Or why did I really freak out the other day when I spoke to my mum? I was really poked at that point. So finding it out, we're really good at that. We're really good at that kind of knowledge acquisition. But what are you going to do with it? How are you going to use that information once, but then keep modifying and adapting? So keep going through that self-regulation cycle. Know that you are constantly under development. Know that you're constantly learning, and that you're responsible for that system of reflection and review and adaptation, and start to enjoy it, because then we're like, it's okay, I'm not there yet, but I know how to keep going, in a way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, that probably brings us on to our last question, really. I guess this is about your values, Rachel. We've been talking about them all the way through. But what is it that you get to do every single day that you absolutely love?
Talk to people. I just love people. I collect them. I just love, I'm so interested. Poor friends of mine, because I'm constantly collecting new friends. Everybody's my friend.
I love that term, collecting people. That's something that my grandparents used to use. I think it's such a nice thing to say.
I love them. I just think human beings are fascinating. And if I can spend my whole life immersed in connecting with people, drinking good coffee and have my dog in some outdoor space, I'm pretty happy, to be honest. Yeah, gorgeous. I'm so lucky. Isn't it lovely to talk to you now at this point? Because if you talk to me over my sort of career profile, I've had such moments of self-doubt, and I still have them now, but I've had big moments of self-doubt where that square peg round hole is just like bashing me over the head. But to be able to bring my family life, my friend's life, my work life together to a place and still see that there's room for me to grow and develop, I just feel really lucky to be in this position, and lucky to be able to talk to you both about it. I've just loved every minute of it. Thank you.
Thank you. I think it's so good to hear, because I think sometimes as well, when we're talking about a lot of these topics, you know, as you were saying earlier, you've got this final picture of a person who has done everything and done everything really well. And actually you never see all the squiggles and the ups and downs and the career that they've had in between, and the doubts and the things that have gone wrong, the mistakes they've made. You never see that. You just see the polished person, you know, talking to either us or, you know, talking at a conference or lecturing. Like, the people who are prominent always seem so polished and finished, and actually that's not the case, is it?
Nope.
Yeah, we all know that
world before that.
I'm very, very, I've always been like that. Maybe that's a trait of mine. I just think that you connect better with people when you share all aspects of yourself and don't hide those bits, those sort of bits that you feel are a bit broken or shameful away. So the more I share, the more I'm vulnerable with other people, the more they open up, and the more we connect and learn together. So I look forward to connecting and learning with you both again soon.
Yeah. Well, thank you so, so much for your time today. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, lovely talking to you. Thank you.
So thank you to everyone else for listening to our podcast. Please see our Instagram account for further information and some of the things that we've spoken about today at VN's Investigate.
And it'd be great if you could rate and review this podcast and tell fellow vet nurses about it, and as many student vet nurses and registered vet nurses know about this free CPD. And we look forward to hearing from you all. Bye.
Bye. Bye.